Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:38 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 11th. And we had a meaningful move today in Chinese 10-year yields, where they popped on the upside. It accompanied some news that the PBOC is taking some money out of the system, having pumped money in consecutive days ahead of the Mid-Autumn Festival holiday. And that was obviously a direct attempt to try and reinstill confidence in the market following the bankruptcies of both China Evergrande and Fantasia. So the fact that the government bond yield is starting to rise, well, on the one hand, it's following through on government bond yields that are rising everywhere else as well. So there's some commonality to that factor. But then there's also the question of, well, just how far are the Chinese willing to go in trying to curtail moral hazard? Now, curtailing moral hazard looks wonderful on paper. And when people want to sit around and talk about what's the best thing to do, well, then it often comes to the fore. And people who want to say that something is right and proper will say, well, stamping out moral hazard is certainly something that needs to be done. And I think everyone has got at least some sympathy with that view. But no one should be under any illusion that it comes with no pain. And China does not have a property tax, and the local governments are 100% dependent on land sales for their funds. So unless there is a pickup in land sales, then local governments are going to run into trouble and municipal debt is going to be on the line. So then the question, of course, is just how far can they go in being parsimonious with how much liquidity they're willing to inject into the market. China's central bank balance sheet really hasn't gone much of anywhere for the last 4 years. And when we look at the size of accommodation that has been adopted by places like Japan, the EU, the UK, and the USA, well, it's an obvious outlier. And that has also contributed to the relative strength of the renminbi. But the renminbi was also a tad weaker in here today, and it had a significant appreciation already. So as the bond yield starts to sell off, well, then there's the potential that that is going to start to price in the scope that China may have to try and devalue their currency in order to blunt the impact of a significant slowdown in the pace of interest in the property markets. Well, one thing we can certainly say, though, is that so far that's speculative, and the banking sector was positive today. And then I think it's also particularly relevant to keep an eye on the property sector, and it has rebounded. Now, so far, the Hong Kong Properties Index has rebounded. It's now testing the lower side of the overhead trading range and that psychological 30,000 level. It's going to have to do better than that to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. We can certainly say, though, that the tech sector is behaving, at least, as if there is going to be additional liquidity. Now, pretty much all of the tech companies bounced in here today, but weren't able to hold on to their highs. So this pop in bond yields, it is a question mark for Chinese tech companies in exactly the same way that a pop on the upside for the US yields is a question mark for other liquidity-fueled rallies. And 5-year yields are pushing on the upside, up really quite significantly on Friday. Now, the yield is, the bond markets today are shut because of Columbus Day, or I think it's now been renamed Indigenous Peoples Day. But the reality is that this looks like a trend with further to go on the upside. And the one thing that I think is interesting, and I wouldn't be willing to stake a great deal of money on it, but it is interesting, and I think it's worth at least highlighting that if we just simply look at a monthly chart, well, then the 1,000-month moving average, it has encountered the yield has encountered resistance in that region on successive occasions for years. So when we look at this over a long period of time, it was true in a bull market, but it was also true in a bear market. So I don't exactly know what the significance of a 16 and two-thirds year moving average is, but certainly in terms of the 5 year, it's been rivetingly consistent. So we're in the region of the 200-day, excuse me, 200-month moving average is going to be a big level. We're currently in the region of the 40. So I think it's potential, at least, that we're going to see yields go up towards the at least the 2.2 area. And that's a significant advance from here. It's not quite a doubling, but it's really not all that far away either. And when we think about the potential, well, just how much can they talk about? They can talk as much as they want about raising interest rates. Maybe the USA has got more room than others, but the question, of course, has to be, well, are we in a debt trap? And when we look at debt to GDP ratios, well, Europe and China and other places are, and particularly when we look at personal debt in places like Canada, then obviously there are issues. So perhaps the dollar, as it continues to rally, that is something that will start to take some pressure or impose some pressure on dollar funding rates around the world. And it's not simply that we're going to have some difficulty in the growth sector. So we're at a very interesting juncture because we've had a reasonably sized pullback on indices like the Nasdaq, and we had a rebound on Thursday, and then it closed on the lows in here today. And as long as bond yields are rising, then it reintroduces the discount rate to the growth sector. So that is a significant hurdle. Then we also have an environment. I thought today there was interesting news as well that the principals at KKR are handing off the control of one of the most successful private equity firms to the next generation. And that sector has done especially well during the pandemic because we've had extraordinarily low interest rates and extraordinary amounts of money printed. And now they're passing it off to the new generation. But we've gone through a 40-year period of contracting yields, and now there is this enormous argument about whether inflation is going to be transient or not. And we had Philip Lane from the ECB talking about that today, saying that that you can't simply take one incidence of a pop in inflation and then conclude that there's a trend, which is true. And in order to have a trend, you need at least two or three data points, and you need to have a higher reaction low. So it's going to be a while before we can conclude with confidence that we're in a new demand-dominated environment. But one thing we can say is that we've had 40 years of contracting yields. So then you have 40 years of back history to support the view that inflation isn't going to pick up, but we are in a very different social scenario on this occasion because the people that would normally be agitating for fiscal austerity, well, they got their way back in 2011 and 12, and that was particularly true in Europe. And what they got in return was a massive populist movement that very nearly destroyed a significant number of political parties. So there is no appetite for fiscal austerity on this occasion. Then we also have the very real potential that the one lesson that people have learned from the pandemic is that they were massively underpaid in the preceding decade. Because how else could you possibly justify giving people more money than they were making from working in unemployment benefits? So that just tells people that what they were working for before was underpaying them. So they're going to demand catch-up pay. But then prices have also risen over the course of the last 18 months, so then they're going to need an even bigger pay bump to keep up with that. So there's the real scope that we're in a new cost push kind of environment. And then on top of that, the appetite for regulation in the aftermath of the credit crisis has taken on a whole range of different sectors. So it started off with regulation of the financial sector, and what I find it's almost ironic that it's the financial sector is one of the best performers over the course of the last few months. But they've had to deal with onerous regulation. Then we've also had extraordinary regulation of the fossil fuels sector. So the introduction of carbon trading in Europe and then insisting that that be adopted internationally and then having the cover of saving the planet to introduce new taxes, all of that is a significant additional new hurdle, and it's also inflationary because it is pushing up the price of everything. So oil prices continue to push on the upside. It's not like we don't know where the oil is. We do. Everybody knows where the oil is. It's in places like Canada and Venezuela and offshore. But you have the prospect, for example, of this oil spill off the coast of Orange County. That's going to probably result in those offshore wells being decommissioned. It's actually looking quite likely that it was an anchor dragging because there are so many ships sitting offshore during a storm a couple of months ago that damaged the pipeline in the first place. So in that respect, it is probably more to do with the pandemic and the unionization of the dock workers and their refusal to turn up at work has been the primary reason for it. But again, nonetheless, it's going to result in a ban on offshore drilling off the West Coast, or most of the West Coast. So these are certainly factors that are going to contribute to higher prices overall. That it's not like we don't know where it is, it's just that we are simply choosing not to drill, and that is helping to inflate prices. So oil prices were not able to hold all of the gain today, but they're definitely establishing the move above the $80 area. Now we are back in a region of previous resistance. It wouldn't be all that surprising to see some consolidation in this area, but the reality here is that it's been a bullish environment overall, and it's been able to hold the region of the 200-day moving average on successive occasions. So as long as that remains the case, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So then we're also starting to see upward pressure coming back into commodities that have had substantial drawdowns. So lumber prices went up a lot, came down a lot, and then have started to rebound. So that is confirming support in the region of the $400 area. And we can go back and look at lots of history because it gives us a really good example of what we can anticipate from other commodity markets. Because the initial big swing upwards in lumber prices was in the early 90s. And subsequently, prices went up and down a lot, and it was a very big range, 100% from trough to peak. But then we've hit entirely new price levels. And the only parallel to that is the big run-up from the lows in 1990, around 144, up to the peaks in early, or I guess late 1993, around 500. So we're in a new price environment, and I think it is directly comparable to think about UK natural gas in the same context. So we're likely to see a substantial drawdown over the course of the next few months, and prices were down again in here today, and we're only just a couple of days off the peak. And there is still scope that there will be problems with supply in the future. But I think it's extraordinarily unlikely that we're ever going to come back down into the base formation, which is around the £80 level. So prices could easily halve from where they are right now, and they still wouldn't be pulling back into the base formation. Then iron ore prices had also pulled back very sharply in October, well, in September. But they're also starting to firm in here. So this is at least a peak of near-term significance. And it also suggests that the base formation below the $100 area, well, now that's representing support. So it's helping to also reignite some interest in the industrial metal miners, and the BHP stock price is starting to rebound and pushing back up towards that 2000 level. The FTSE 350 mining index is heavily weighted by those iron ore producers, and it is beginning to demonstrate support in the region of the upper side of that range that formed between about 2018 and 19. But ultimately, this is just one very big long base formation. So it's certainly supporting the view that we're in a new price environment overall. And then I think one of the main arguments that central banks are making is that this environment that we had after the credit crisis, where we had a big swing upwards in commodity prices, then that's directly analogous to what we're seeing right now. But I don't believe that that's the case. I think we're in a new price cycle, and that there's the significant potential that these ranges that we've seen evolve over the course of the last 13 and 15 years are going to be resolved on the upside. And we're seeing an increasingly large number of commodities breaking on the upside. So palm oil prices continue to push on the upside, and that is a significant component in lots of different products. Then we've also seen that aluminium prices are also pushing on the upside, and this is also directly responsible, or in excuse me, it's a direct response to the upward pressure that we're seeing on oil prices. And then, of course, we have copper. And copper has been going sideways since 2006, and it is now pressuring that sequence of lower rally highs since the peak in May, and it was up another 7.6 cents in here today. So if it can sustain a move above 450, well, then it's broken the sequence of lower rally highs, confirmed support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and then we're back in a demand-dominated environment overall. So I continue to think that this new commodity-led bull market is going to be dominated by copper and renewable energy assets and batteries overall. And the lithium sector is also a significant portion of that. We've definitely seen that there's been some consolidation in lithium over the course of the last while, but it is continuing to steady, and we remain in a bullish environment overall. When we think about bond yields and the potential for a significant reweighting. I think that it is increasingly likely that the sector that has done best over the course of the last decade did so because of low interest rates and abundant liquidity. And as we move into a new cycle where higher interest rates, higher inflation, and the reintroduction of a discount rate, it's going to lead to new sectors outperforming. So that particularly favors commodities as real assets. It also particularly favors banks and less so the growth sector. And then within the growth sector, the portions of it that come under the greatest pressure are those that don't have profits. So certainly the large companies, the mega caps, they have been well supported by their balance sheets and their cash piles and their ability to continue to grow their revenues. So they may not lead on the downside, but there are plenty of smaller companies that have had a really fantastic time because they haven't been pressured by profits. But as a discount rate is introduced, then they will have some of those pressures brought to bear. So what that suggests to me, at least, is that we're likely to see other sectors perform better over the next few years than the technology sector. But at the same time, the technology sector continues to be in a reasonably consistent trend, and it would need to pull back by at least 1800 points from the peak in order to question that consistency, and we are not there yet. When we then think about some of the commodity producers, even in Australia, we've had the technology sector take over in terms of the relative performance of the resources sector, and there's the potential for reordering there. In Canada, Shopify is the largest company on the index by a fairly substantial margin, but it's also a company that does not make money. We saw, for example, in here today that TikTok announced its European balance sheet, and they are losing in the order of, I think it was, I really can't remember the figure, it was $300 or $400 million a year, or if, and it may be, I just can't believe it's billion, so it must be million. But the reality is that these types of high growth companies, then they do tend to have difficulty getting to a position of profitability, and then it really is a race whether they can get to profitability before the money dries up. And that has not been a challenge over the course of the last decade, but it is going to be a challenge going forward. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.